agents thing in our country is.
What's the Tony Clement story?
Tony Clement used to be a minister in Harper's government.
Yeah.
Now he's you know, with the opposition party, but he is one of the people who is on the, you know, CSIS and CSEC. They have, like, there are oversight bodies that are, you know, secret.
Yeah.
They're parliament, they're PM, we have MPs that get to supposedly oversee it, and they don't have any authority to tell them to stop, but the idea is that, like, well, at least you get a glimpse. At least Parliament gets a glimpse into our activity.
Right.
And so that this committee includes Tony Clement. And then, but the scandal came out that he was, first of all, it was an infidelity scandal and a poor decision making scandal where he was like sexting people or something, like sending nudes. But anyway, the point
Hold it, Lauren. Yeah, I want to hear what the story is. So what happened?
You don't want to think about... I'm sorry to make you think about Tony Clement dick pics, but the idea is that he confessed or whatever, he reported that there were multiple extortion attempts made on him from these people that he had sent compromising things to. And so it came out that, people are trying to get at Canada's secrets through Tony Clement's, you know, weakness for wanting to show people his
voyeurism. Wow.
But he's a victim too in that case. Like, he's like, listen, guys, you know, I might have been like this dude, but I'm also a victim. Oh, sorry, Canada.
It provides this wonderful glimpse into how meager our public, you know, oversight of what's going on. Like, Americans have it made compared to Canada in terms of knowing what the hell their government is doing. Americans have, like, a better fundamental advantage written into the legal structure or something. Like, in Canada, it's just, there's absolutely no default making things public or declassifying of any sort. You know, like, in the United States, there's, like, a notion that things are eventually supposed to become publicly accessible, and they declassify them sort of automatically. Maybe after a long time, maybe after a frustratingly long time. But in Canada, they're just like, yeah, we have, like, mile-high stacks of documents that are never going to see the light of day. That's everything that Canada did. And, like,
yeah,
people,
like,
you have to know,
is,
you have to ask for it and know what you're asking for in order to see it. And they have to prove it.
That's like Britain. And Britain is quite dominant like that, too. So it's the Queen's area ain't free.
Right. No. And, like, but this is the thing. So we don't have any sort of automatic historical journalistic value of declassifying. And the only, like, we're not likely to have any, like, church committee hearing style things in Canada.
Right.
It doesn't look like on the horizon. Like, all we have is this, like, well, we'll handpick a couple of your members of parliament, and they will get to, they don't boss around the intelligence services in any way. It's not oversight in that sense. Just, we'll let them know something about what we did. And so it's like, and then this recent story is like, well, it just highlights how it's like, well, first of all, that doesn't really help us know anything, because it's not like they issue regular reports to us. The idea is just that we're supposed to trust that because Parliament heard something about it, a little slice of Parliament heard something about it, if anything was too bad, surely they'd tell us. We're supposed to trust that. It doesn't do us any good, but what it does do is create this massive vulnerability where now, like, Canada's secrets are being leaked to someone along with Tony Clement's dick pic.
Canada's great. Great, profound secrets that are going to affect the world.
Say it again.
Right.
Great for what?
If If only I believed Canada had secrets that were
of any significance. So, yeah. So he found it claustrophobic because it is a claustrophobic being a Canadian.
Yeah.
It's like, even this conversation is like claustrophobic.
This conversation is? What's wrong with this conversation?
No, it's not really a problem, but like, did Mayor Rob, did his brother walk out of the discussions with the Prime Minister on Thursday, like he talked about he was going to?
Ford?
Yeah, remember all the provinces were going to meet with the Prime Minister for the first time in a while, and they all had their own little things. And he was like, if they're talking about something, I'm going to just walk out. And that's all I heard in the airport on the way out of Toronto. Did nothing happen, though? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
No.
He's always saying stuff like that. He's weird.
Not been informed.
That guy's crazy.
Wait, what's there? Are you judging somebody?
I'm an outsider here, so I mean, I don't have a right to
talk about
Canada's crazy. Yeah, that guy's nuts. Right? Doesn't he just like, I could call him right now and be like, I've cracked, and he'd probably come here, right? Isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
probably
so
Trump would too, though, if you called him and asked him to come.
I don't know. I don't know if I can get through this Trump.
You think our Canadian, we don't even give our secrets away. Like, no, we're like even harder to get to. Trust.
Nobody wants them.
I know, well, yeah, but you're supposed to work out what no one is looking at, right? So maybe Canada is.
Why?
The one thing that's not fact about Canada's secrets.
What's that?
No, I'm saying in general, it's the one thing that isn't discussed. And I've heard, you know, if you're looking at all this information, look at what is purposely not being.
What's the noun of your paragraph?
The Canada's secrets. We don't delve into them.
Yeah, we're polite.
Yeah, I guess, hey, man, even towards them.
Santa Claus lives in Canada.
What?
You know, that's Canada's secrets. Canada's got the North Pole. Santa Claus lives here. That's a big
Yeah. Rudolph is a dual citizen. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean.
Yep.
Yeah, the reindeer are actually caribou. The whole world has been wrong this entire time. That's another secret that we're not supposed to tell you.
I saw a caribou, and this documentary I was watching the other day, I'd never seen one. And I realized that's probably what I thought were albino deer when I lived in upstate New York. They're probably right up there, too. But they're very light, aren't they?
No.
No?
They're like reindeer.
But they're, I mean, they're fur. Their coats are light. No? They're colored like a reindeer.
Like, look. They are reindeer. They are the reindeer. The reindeer are caribou. Didn't you listen to what I just said? Come on now.
Okay, I got it. Got it now.
Reindeer. But don't, like, yeah, Justin Trudeau's going to write me a really angry letter now. Disclosing those secrets.
Yeah, I read a column. About how childish that Trudeau is. I wonder where I read that. Who would have been saying, they realize, holy shit, we've got a kid for a prime minister. Where would I have read that?
Anywhere.
I shouldn't be a surprise.
Jordan Peterson?
Oh, yeah, Jordan Peterson.
On your Facebook.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I posted Peterson. He did a pretty incisive analysis of... Justin, what a fraud the kid was. Yep. Yeah, that was, check it out. I posted. Listen to Jordan, you know, 15, 20 minutes on Justin Trudeau. It's pretty incisive.
Oh, is it live?
No, he's being interviewed. It's a video.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Yeah, perfect. I like that. Sounds good. I was kind of struck by his like lack of authority when talking about the fact that his like 13 provinces and territories weren't going to get along, but he's like, you know, they may have different here, but we're going to like try, you know, to try to, you know, to see what we do have in common with. And if there's something that we have in common, we're definitely going to talk about it as well as we can to, you know, come to some sort of solution that might, you know, benefit as many Canadians as possible.
Okay, Lauren, I got the pattern here. As each generation gets more and more Finneganized and detached from media and can't take anything seriously, he is like the last president, last prime minister. He's just under, what is he, a Generation Xer, but he can't get too excited about the media world and the world he's in because it's hardly substantial for him. So that's why he's so kind of offhanded, casual in discussing issues. Like he can barely pretend it's not fake news. And
right.
So the millennials, they don't even show up. They just stay in their bedrooms and text. They don't consider anything out there worth engaging.
Yeah,
so there
it's
it is, Brian.
It was
there's
not
your,
an issue.
There's your super detachment. Yeah, what Jordan was outraged is something about women. Justin was asked, what did he do? He said women, you know, he's run by his wife or something. Let's see. He gave an answer about women. Oh, yeah. So he was at some college thing. So somebody got up and started talking about mankind. It was a woman. And he interrupts. He says, no, it's not mankind. It's personkind. And Jordan was outraged that this guy is equivocating over the phrase mankind. And he goes on very articulate about that. And then he goes back to the scandal of Trudeau when he appointed his cabinet. It had to be 50% women. It didn't matter whether anybody was skilled or not or qualified. If they were women, there was half the jobs were given to women. So he really laid that point. What? You said something. You going to take responsibility for your words?
This is the interview.
Okay, do it. What do you mean? You have the Jordan interview?
Can you hear it? Because I'm playing it right now.
We can't hear it. We can't hear it. And don't play it.
Okay.
We don't want to get bogged down in it. We don't want to get bogged down in anything. We want to keep moving.
I just found the section of it that was talking about the mankind. That's all. It's okay. Yeah, keep moving. All right, yeah, cool.
No, it's not coming through strong enough. So,
all right.
What's the next point? You know, now Croker wrote about this, Brian, in the early 90s, maybe late 80s, about the TV viewer was engaging in different rivulets of experience. So he got the indifference, McLuhan's point, quite early. The indifferent rivulets of experience is the average TV condition, the average TV body.
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between being detached and indifferent, right?
There might be.
Okay.
I'll leave it up to you to work on it.
It could be context. Never mind.
Yeah, you know, it's indifference is detached. Yeah, detachment is indifferent. Well, okay, so you're being affected by it, but you refuse to get involved. Maybe that's not indifference.
Right.
Okay, next topic. What exciting things could be discussed?
Well, I watched an awesome MMA fight tonight that took place in Toronto, and the girl that was from Cleveland that I was really into won, so that was cool.
What sport?
Ties all of those things.
What sport?
Oh, MMA. Mixed martial arts.
What? Mixed martial arts?
Mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. So basically, all kinds of forms, but like, I would say that I like it because I've always liked watching boxing. So this is like even more contact, different rules. But it's cool because there's a lot of girls. Mm. Oh, and also her last name was I.
I.
Mm-hmm. E-Y-E.
Well, that reminds you of Sean's kid. Such a good boxer, they had to put her on
heavyweight. No, I mean, that's why that impressed me when Sean said that, because I've been starting to follow this. I didn't realize there was such a, I mean, there's not a lot of professional sports that have female divisions, especially not ones that are taken legitimately. I mean, you have basketball and maybe soccer, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. Let's move on. Brian, just go look at your Facebook page. Pick a topic.
So I can't pull it up right now.
Oh, okay.
No, here's the best. I didn't come up with this one, but dig this anagram very quickly. We can move right off of it afterward, but it's that someone else came up with this month. Donald Trump's White House equals humanoid upsets the world.
That's good.
I like that one. Because, yeah, on the recent Bob show you were talking about, you kind of opened and then finished with this notion of Trump as, like, a void.
Yeah. Not really there.
Trying to grapple with that idea. It's weird.
You're trying to.
Or just recommending grappling with that idea, or that was your opening and closing probe.
That's
like,
right.
What if there is a Donald Trump?
Yes, I start off saying, how do you know he's real? And I end up getting real physicists about it. He was a technical void.
Yeah.
So, I thought about that. I thought about, how can you tell people he's not real? You know, because people get so involved with it, so... Yeah, it's hard to prove that he's not real, other than why are you believing what the media are telling you? You know, why are you taking your TV so seriously?
Right, on principle.
Yeah.
That all news is fake, unless you're going to come at it from a sort of a metaphysical principle that all news is fake, so that includes anything about Donald Trump.
Right.
But, yeah, it's hard to get more specific.
That's what I wanted to mention. This guy, Dan Boingo, former Secret Service guy, he's put out a pretty interesting book tying it all together to show what criminals Mueller and his team are. Now, I posted his rant by him, a talk, 25 minutes or something, 30 minutes, where he summarizes his book, but he's pretty good. He just quotes CNN and the left-wing sources to prove his point. But Alex Kuskus just said bullshit, but he is citing nothing but, you know, court facts and how it's a small cabal of the same people involved in a lot of stuff. And remember, Mueller went after LaRouche in the 80s. He
right.
put LaRouche away. So,
well, I mean, that's disappointing if you're going to call bullshit literally on something that's, you know, well sourced, and you wouldn't be able to defend individually though calling those sources bullshit. Well, that's just, you know, that's just bad print value. That's not how to watch TV news.
No, that's not a media ecologist. So, I think what was really interesting was Maureen Dowd's article on the Clintons in Toronto last weekend.
Right. That was one bit, because I knew there were some things I wanted to respond to from the last.
Well, you tuned out. Say it again. What did you realize?
I knew there were some things I wanted to respond to from the last couple shows. I didn't remember. That was great to hear that, like, wow. Yeah, Toronto is not, for whatever Toronto's flaws, at least Toronto is not buying the future president hype anymore about
right.
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, they bought it 4 years ago. Everybody was there. They said this will be the first woman president. And then nobody comes to the last week. But Maureen Dowd is very embedded within them. You know, she loved them, she hated them, she got all involved with them for the last 30 to 27 years she's been covering them. But it was devastating to her to see what happened. And then a few days later, Hillary's there, bitter, pissed off, and will not acknowledge Trump, you know, at the funeral.
Oh, right. I get
George Bush Sr.
The well, yeah, it's pretty devastating because it's, you know, it's sort of this idea that it's kind of taken almost, it's almost taken on faith that they got it wrong last time, and maybe a rematch, maybe a do-over would go the other way. But if no one's believing that anymore, then that's got to be tough for some people to swallow.
Yeah, and Maureen, she found it very hard. In the end, she just pities them. But yeah, it's all over for them. For now, anyways, unless some retrieval happens. But the that was a pretty devastating article, the way she described their puny talk to the Canadians.
Yeah. And it was pretty, and I mean, that was being shared with glee, you know, this headline that they've got tickets for $6 now, of course. The funny thing about that is that, like, hey, yeah, and that's $450 US. It's even worse than it sounds.
Yeah. So watch the Boningo, Dan Boningo talk. It's pretty good. What he does at May Brussel on the connections of everybody to everything else. It's just a small cabal involved with everything going back to 2007 or something.
Cool.
But can we get back into substance?
What manner
no.
of substance?
Yes, of course. What do you mean?
Nobody can come up with any substance.
Okay, May Brussel. I was just listening to some of her archives, and she talks about this book that I love. It's called The Second Genesis, The Coming Control of Life. I've always wanted to talk to you about it, Bob. I may have at certain points
before.
And you're
saying May talked about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is like a source for her. And I tried to tell you about it before because they have quotes of Frank Zappa in it. If you go to the May Brussel archive.
That restructure. Mm-hmm. How much is the restructure?
Hey, Lauren, you're not muted.
You sure?
Yep.
You're drowning out our conversation.
Well, it's not going to be much longer because I'm going to go to bed. But I'll send you the link and I will have some questions ready about it. But I thought, hey, I found this in the May Brussel archive, and she's praising it and promoting people learning from this. Maybe this will be the way I can get Bob to finally listen to me and talk about this book.
Right. Well, what is the thesis?
It's about biosociopropolepsis, which is a word that the author made up. It's about engineering environments and the possibilities of, could you really honestly do it with good intentions, and could that really play out the way that you want it to, with it seeming or almost being organic to the next generation? And they're drawing on, which is, here's the taboo and the touchy part. They're using what is absolutely legitimate research that the Nazis did. But it's so taboo to even acknowledge that something may have possibly altered the world for the better out of Nazi Germany.
Right.
It's a very, like, you know, nobody wants to talk about that at all. So that's what this book is all about, finding those good things, and how do we not erase history? How do we, I guess, like what you say, elevate it or enhance it?
Yeah. So what, it's about genetic engineering?
It is about genetic engineering, but it's not limited to that, because it's a kind of an encyclopedia book, the way they wrote it. It's not a very I don't want to say that. Some chapters are kind of biased because he goes on and on about Frank Zappa and how much of an impact Freak Out had on society.
On what?
And that's an opinion. No, on social, like on the social interactions of parents and kids and different things like that. The book was published in 70.
And is saying Frank Zappa's Freak Out had an influence on society?
Huge influence, like created a rift between the youth culture and their parents.
Wow. That's
I tried to sell you on this book with that point, but that wasn't enough. Now that I've found it, where Maeve Russell goes into it, I think I might have to just link it all together and show it to you.
Do you have the date of her broadcast? When did she cover the book?
You know what? My computer's off right now. I don't know. I'm not sure. You can go. You know where the page that has... where you can order her cassette tapes. You know what I'm talking about? That site, Bob?
Yeah.
It's, if you go there and you use their search engine there, you can just do Second Genesis, Coming Control of Life. Albert Rosenthal, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I got the book from my art teacher, Mr. Bowman, and it was not really of much interest to me until... I started opening it up to random pages, and it would have social engineering and then this Frank Zappa thing. And they do a big part about electronic brain manipulation through implants and then also through electromagnetic wave fields, how to control masses with those kinds of things. The whole intention always draws back to, is it possible to really earnestly and organically inspire a next generation with these kind of cues and prompts, or is that just completely controlling them? That's what's cool about the book.
Zappa touched down control of populations in Uncle Meat, 69, maybe that's what the guy was reading. Zappa's Uncle Meat scenario.
And that's possible, too, because they do. They talk a lot about the mosquito tones used to control crowds. And I think it may be the first time that I ever read about how Hitler used different tones with his audiences and things like that. But, again, it isn't afraid to go into information that was learned through these horrible death camps. So-called, you know, these horrible medical experiments that were carried out, it really is. It's really taboo to bring up anything good that might have come from that, even though a lot of things that we consume came from that.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what's interesting about this book to me, because nobody does that. Or they do alt-right version of it, the alt-right, like crazy exploitation, let's do it again kind of version.
Okay, well, yeah, send me a notice on the book.
Yeah, I absolutely will.
If it's 1970, Zappa did have a high profile in relation to youth culture in 68, 69, so the author probably was influenced by that.
That's the thing. It was all written in 68, and it was... published for mass consumption in 70. So that
was writing a big essay in Life magazine in June 68. So that's why the guy would notice Zappa at that point.
Well, that's pretty cool. He talks about ESP too. I mean, things like that. But he does this other thing called BSP. And, like, he has a lot of different little acronyms that he... does footnotes, and the author says, I made this word up, so I'm going to give you the definition of it now. So that's a very Bob thing to do. There's not a way to explain this, so I'm going to give you the words to explain this. I like that. But yeah, I'll set it all up on the blog, like links to everything.
What were you eating?
It was over here.
Oh, okay.
And, yep, with that, I'm going to get off and go to bed.
What was your last sentence?
I said I will use that blog that I have. I'll just put the links to everything on there and then bring it back up next time.
Okay.
Or send you the link to that blog so it's all on one page.
All right. So, okay. What's the next point?
Mm-hmm. That's not for me to decide. Farewell, boys.
Good night.
Okay, we'll see you, Sarah. You had a nice...
Hi, Sarah.
You put some good content in there tonight.
Well...
Yes?
I was thinking about that meme magic... Because I just listened, or very recently listened to the Bob Show 38.
Yeah, did you like that?
Job.
Did I make progress on that?
Yeah.
Good?
Yeah. It really, just really looking back on it, and I'm more and more astonished at the whole meme magic aspect of Trump and just how popular that was and how much of a story it became. Because I really think back to recording conversation with you 10 years ago and grappling with this idea. I was saying that, well, my reaction to when you, Bob, say that, you know, you're going to be in the white, or in a presidential position, I think was the phrase you used,
right,
by now, or 2012 or whatever. And I was trying to grapple with, obviously, that's ridiculous, you know, in like 4 years' time or something.
You said ridiculous? Did you say the word ridiculous?
Yes, that obviously it's ridiculous, except the point,
yeah,
my one idea that I was thinking is that, you know, the xenochrony, or the weird coincidences,
yeah,
that is such a crazy, powerful power that, because, you know, the thing is trying to imagine you have, like, a devoted following, but it's very slim, and imagining getting there from here is impossible or whatever.
It's impossible. It's ridiculous.
The only imaginable snakes and ladder that could get there from here that I could imagine was a series of such improbable coincidences that, you know, it just basically leveled people's minds. But, so it was interesting, obviously, getting Trump already had a big TV body, right? But it was still considered ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, no, you can't get there from here, and he's not a politician, right? But, like, it's just amazing that, like, part of... And it's strange because there's not really an argument made... This is the thing. They don't try to make an argument that the meme magic converted people. It just gave great enthusiasm to the base, you know? Like, do they claim that people were won over by this? People were like, well, I see that, oh, you got, like, repeating numbers on your tech posts 5 times in a row, so now I support Trump. They weren't really converting people. They were just energizing the base. It created belief. Self-belief. Not poor, but...
Okay, just a minute, Brian. Someone's making a lot of noise. Who's moving shit? I'm not near the computer to mute. Okay, they got quiet. Yeah, Brian, what does this phrase meme magic refer to?
Well, this thing where the shit posters on 4chan boards... Who the deplorables, among them, they're not all deplorables, whatever, you know, the base that got the Pepe the Frog thing going and into this whole tech mythology about the frog god, that it got going on this experience where people basically, you know, they got the amplified synchronicity experience. They were having their exciting digital community happening, and when they would find that when they communicated something, you know, dank, something good that really communicates, that it would, there was a mysteriously increased likelihood that the random number of that post would end in repeating digits.
Mm.
And so then they ended up, people started noticing this, or they would get on a run of someone would comment about that, and the comment post would also have the repeating number, so they would get on these little synchronicity runs about, obviously 22 was involved in there, that would have been one of the, and 44 would have been among the repeating numbers, but
yeah.
Stoking this scene. So it's just fascinating to me that that did end up playing out, and there was at least that it's been associated with the rise of Trump, just this notion of
right.
coincidence. And then people, I mean, I should have tried harder to put this out to people. I did it kind of once, but you shared a link to this thing. I think it was the one the Science for the People maybe magazine about a great article about the dirty tricks in Chile leading up to the coup.
And right.
Dirty media tricks. I think it was that article that this guy, oh no. Sorry, never mind. This is the why it's so fucking like why it's extra trippy. Not only is it relevant to the whole meme magic scene, it's super relevant to you. It was when you shared the thing about the October 22 movement.
Yes.
In there, he mentioned something I'd never heard of, and as far as I know, these meme magic people didn't stumble on, that there was a... He suddenly, in that article, he suddenly mentions a fictional Commander Pepe.
Oh, wow.
That there was some sort of mythic... There was some, like, rumor... Some viral rumor among the people or something about a Commander Pepe that, what on the October 22? And like, so, you know, that's just like, I mean, to me, that gave cred to, you know, the idea of, you or your people or the people that you have weird connections to having something to do with Trump as well. Like,
right.
That like, oh, and maybe it's this October 22 movement group that's, because you got to be supported by someone, obviously. You can't get anywhere.
Right.
You know?
Like, so let me supplement
LaRouche
this.
Has clout. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The October 22nd movement article was in April 81 Covert Action Bulletin. And Neufeld, I think, discovered it. Or the guy who wrote that, Fred somebody, typical leftist journalist, he came to Derek's seminars around 84, 83, 84, in there somewheres. He spoke at the coach house. But I didn't know who he was at that point. Then I bought all the Covert Action Bulletins back in the 80s up to that point. And I have them here, and I found that article. So I think I found the article, but Neufeld had interviewed this guy on CKLN for his media expertise about Latin America or something. So we experienced this guy. It's, you're making it come back on a clearer level. We experienced this guy in many ways, through the McLuhan coach house, on CKLN, and then me finding that he's talking about number 22. So, now, what I said to you 10 years ago, 2008, I guess, when we did the synchronicity, when we did you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, summer 2008. I probably made preposterous statements about my importance in things, in the Android meme. Well, within a year, Ion shows up. But Ion doesn't talk about me in that way till many years into it. But when Ion starts pointing out, he's the one who said, well, Trump is Bob in the White House. You know, I didn't say that. He said it. And then you start thinking about it. Okay, and then the Trump era unfolds. And then you find these things. you're the only historian of this stuff. And that's what that interview was about in 2008. It was about your historian of my synchronicity overlapping with your synchronicity. And so you're the only one. There's no one else in the world who would notice what you were just talking about. The 44, you know, the 22, and Pepe and all that. So you're the scholar of it. But I don't know if you're aware that you're fully supported by ION. You should be shocked that I'm there in the middle of it, and there's no real apparent reason in normal secular terms why I should be there. But if our stuff is affecting the world like ION says it is, then we are the most powerful people on the planet, and the media is bouncing off us, even the White House. That's how I understand.
Yeah. It already has so many times that, like, it creates a kind of a, like, dread of, like, oh, my God, like, any given thing you say could turn into a wild binocrony, like, in a few days when something calls back, when the Android meme calls back to it.
Well, guess what, Brian? ION told me about a year ago, as our stock, as they say, goes up, as we get more known, our products and all that stuff, ION says, Bob, you're going to have to watch what you say. For the first time in my life, I was told, you know, ION celebrates everything I say. He likes it. But he said, when the Android meme starts, when you need to go stealth around that kind of intensity, you're going to need to fucking watch what you say, probably for the reason you're saying it.
Mm.
Yeah. I won't be able to predict anymore or make declarations. They'll come, something will happen to them so quickly. So that's pretty interesting that's what you're picking up on. You get that, Lauren? Are you getting that, Brent? Are you there? Do I need to go down and unmute you?
I'm here.
Who's that? Who said I'm here? Oh, that's Lord.
It's Lauren, yeah. I'm here.
Oh, okay. What about Brent? He might be muted. One thing about Brent, Brian, is that he's finding these interesting quotes from the booklet that Ed Long put together of my interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just piling them up, and they are pretty incredible. But he's, if you know, no, you wouldn't know this. So he posts them on Alex's blogs, Alex Kuss's blog, the Clue blog. But what he does, he says they're said by anonymous.
Right, brilliant.
Which is fantastic. He's sneaking them in there.
Yeah, they're not tagged.
Yeah, but anybody who reads them knows it's me. You know, just the way I'm talking there. So Alex has told me a couple weeks ago, he said, Bob, he private messaged me, I'm going on vacation in Mexico, but in the new year we're going to have a talk. Now he's lurking on my Facebook page and noticing the testimonials, I assume, the ION stuff and this and that, and the whole world, Bob's cult there, you know, people praise Bob and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think he might be wondering what the fuck is going on over there. So he wants to talk about it, I think.
Cool.
You believe these people? Like Phil's always saying some terrible thing happens, Trump should be shot, dragged out of the White House, but he gets off. And then Phil says, yeah, he's just doing Bob and ION's business. You know, what is Alex? Who, if you go to Alex's site, he is blasting Trump every day. I think he has a link where he can get all the bashing Trump cartoons immediately. That's all he has. It's very anti-Trump thing. He's obsessed, it would seem.
Right.
And so I'm very curious about what his issues will be. Because he can't get rid of me because what I post is too valid, too real, all these letters and stuff I'm posting.
Yeah.
So I've hijacked him.
That's quite a dilemma. Oh man!
Like I posted.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to post more than five letters a week. So he got mad because he thought I overposted. And he said, we are not turning this scholarly place with 15 other members into the Bob Dobbs show. He doesn't, right. I mean, I could post a lot, I could post 100 a week, but then that draws too much attention to me. So he's saying, nope, you're going to keep it to 5 a week, Bob, and that's that. You know, it's not going to be the Bob Dobbs yeah. show. So he's very keen on keeping it. And the scholars, the 1,500 scholars, they're doing nothing. Nobody's posting anything. I don't think they read the thing.
Right, it might not come up in their feed.
Oh know? Yeah, this new change on Facebook, which I don't know.
If you don't interact much with a group, then it might not it might not show you.
Yeah,
what gets posted in the group.
Yeah, you know about that, eh? They limit something. They limit your. Yeah. You don't. I've seen people lately going, Jesus Christ, there's all these people that I haven't talked to in years, and it's because they weren't seeing my posts, and I thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah. It only shows your posts to a handful of your friends, really.
Yeah. The ones that are in your echo chamber.
There. Yeah.
Okay. So what? So you hear that, Lauren? Brian is explaining how the absurd things I said, placing myself at the center of the Endor beam 10 years ago, you can make the case that I was not wrong and that I am.
Well, okay.
I'll say this, Brian. You know how McLuhan says yeah. the automated presidential surrogate is a superlative nobody. So Trump is the presidential surrogate, and I'm the guy he's surrogating for.
Right. Yeah, you're the one who actually knows enough about what's going on or is aware enough
yeah.
to conduct it.
Yes, to conduct it. Someone's coming in.
Yeah, it's just me plugging in. I've been waiting to say this for a while about Trump and how he knows he's in control, so that when he says something like about Paris, that people are chanting, we want Trump, we want Trump, he's just reading their minds. What he's saying, he says they should be saying that, or they're saying it subconsciously, they're
right.
wanting the Trump way compared to the Marcon way. That's all he's saying. And people take
yeah.
him so literally.
But see, they reported that they were saying it. So he creates the fake news, you know,
right.
not maliciously.
Right, but there's that level
right.
to look upon it on. And maybe, yeah, maybe.
You're saying that he thinks it or says it to his wife and then it manifests.
There's that level, but also that they obviously should be saying, if they had any
yeah.
wisdom at all, that they should have
right.
Trump and not Marcon. I mean, it's obvious to anybody.
Okay, so the Android meme knows that, and they follow what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Privately, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It'll show up in some fake news story.
Yep. And then those words get out there, people hear it, and they think, yeah, that's right, or no way.
Yeah.
So it's very cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so Trump, I wonder if he's noticing his synchrony or a synchronicity, you know. I wonder if it's
yeah.
weirder than he expected.
Yeah, I would think
yeah.
so, because he's had so much positive synchronicity, things working out for him, you know, even though he goes bankrupt a dozen times.
What? You blipped out, Carol.
Oh, weird. I'm standing right here.
Yeah, what was your sentence?
He has synchronicity in his life, and he has to realize and recognize it, because the guy's been bankrupted a dozen times, yet he's still a billionaire and president. Something's working for him.
Yeah, I like people, they say, you say Trump is dumb, and you work at a fucking McDonald's making, you know, $5 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, who has for no reason ever in the universe, is now president. I think that's a little smarter than you're giving him credit for.
Yeah.
No, he was just in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone
he
told me.
Fell into it.
I had an interesting article about this. I had an argument about it with an engineer, but I'm sorry.
Just before, I just before you go into Lauren, there was a sentence there.
Carolyn.
Yeah, did you finish your sentence, Karen? Okay, you're...
No, I was just going to say, I'll finish this up. The other night someone said to me, yeah, you know, Trump, whatever, but as soon as Ginsburg dies, you wait, America is going to blow up. I said, well, at least America isn't burning like Paris. And he said, well, just wait until Ginsburg dies. So,
what does that mean? Why? What's the problem there?
Because Trump will choose another conservative judge, and it'll be over, according to the liberals.
The liberals will not tolerate it.
Right. They'll start, you know, anybody that he nominates or even thinks of nominating, they'll claim rape them.
Yeah. Okay. So, Paris thing.
Yeah, you being down in the room there is echoing.
Yeah, I know. I got to move. Okay, so... the Paris thing. I don't know. Okay, Lauren, go ahead.
Oh, I had an argument with one of my engineer friends in L.A. about Trump, and he's like, Trump's a total failure. And I'm like, what's your definition of, like, success? And he's like, well, it's when you are good at what you do. I'm like, so he's like, I'm going to be president of the United States, and then he became president of the United States. I mean, to me, that's the definition of success. So how can you say that he's a failure? That's like everything successful. It's like setting a goal and then totally, completely accomplishing it. He's like, well, I guess if you put it that way, he's a success, but I don't think what he's doing is successful. I'm like, yeah, but he's doing everything that he wants to do, so technically he's succeeding at everything he wants to do. You just don't agree with his ambitions. And he's like, ugh. I see what you're saying, but, like...
It's that your engineer friend had never heard the other point of view. He's living in the CNN reality or something.
Yeah, he just
you deflate him with your arguments immediately.
Because he's a logical person, and I was using direct logic to counter his claims, and he can't help but realize that, or else he wouldn't be able to claim being a logical person anymore.
So right.
He values his logic. He values logic over his political beliefs to a certain
emotions.
Extent, which is good. Yeah, or his emotions. He's just one of those like, Americans that wishes he was a better, that his country represented him instead of the other people, you know? It's an ego thing.
Yeah. So, Brian, back to that, your thoughts about my synchronicities and synchrony comes out of the dialogue with Lovejob. Any more statements on that?
What I was, another uncanny thing about, because, you know, I was, the way the meme magic worked was different how I was imagining, because obviously I was amazed with, it's a longer ladder from your profile to a presidential nomination, but what I was imagining was a more, you know, the kind of extreme coincidences that just like go viral as news or something. Like what would make you become instantly famous in a way that might make people actually then pay attention to what you had to say or something.
Yeah.
It's just funny because I guess I was imagining something. This is not the type of event that I was imagining, but in the way that you're, you know, just like the idea of you being like a Forrest Gump of history or something,
yeah.
That there have been these news stories about people surviving multiple terror attacks or something.
Yeah.
You know, like if you just like happen to be like these three, the last three newsworthy things that happened in town, this guy was a bystander. Like what? Like that would be a viral news story or something. And then it's like, oh, it turns out I'm running for president. Like, well, I'm voting for that guy. And then you'd win all the debates. Anyway, I'm in my crazy imaginings of how synchronicity would put you on a rapid snakes and ladders ladder from the margins to the top of the mountain. I was imagining something, I guess, that's remarkably similar to, you know, there's the Trump meme magic, but then there's also these other magic stories of
No, there was one lately that was three, I thought, that someone survived their third terror attack or something. No, because it was a huge group of people. It was a big group of a huge, like a dozen survivors of the Las Vegas shooting survived another shooting at a bar. That they're like, oh, the latest atrocity. And they're like, funny, lots of the people there were people from Las Vegas.
Wow.
It was in the California shooting in Sherman Oaks.
Thousand Oaks.
Thousand Oaks. There was a guy that would, like, in a bunch of terrorist attacks and shootings, and this was, like, his third shooting and been part of it. Like,
a new kind of Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Right. Or a new kind of synchronicity probe of the public's
consciousness. Like, Ian would have a very interesting take on that. He would point out how that guy is attracting it. He is the problem,
he's a drama queen. He just keeps creating these, like, near-death environments where he can be at the beginning of, like, but he just can't get enough of it, so he never wants to die, right? He wants to be Forrest Gump, kind of, you know, of terrorism. Who knows?
You know, you take all, see, Brian, my thesis is that all the advanced ideas people have, well, there's all kinds of great progress in all the stupid disciplines. You know, psychology, they got great new experiments proving stuff. Every discipline is a renaissance of insight, but nobody knows about it. Nobody's tracking it all, putting it together. But if you took all the advanced breakthroughs, how could one be an artist or an anti-environment to that? I say that what's happened to me is that. That's the anti-environment. That's the new art form.
Right.
Yeah, you know I say that. Like, I'm a new kind of artist, but it's totally resonant to the world we live in. A painting doesn't do anything. A musician doesn't do anything. You know, all the arts don't do it. Maybe the closest is Trump. That was a modern art form that he pulled off. He was a performance piece. But for decades of it, I'm the guy who did it. You know, if someone listened to you present what you did tonight, they would find it quite preposterous. But if they looked into it, they'd come to the same conclusion.
Right. Well, it's like a kind of a dancing, that dancing, you know, it's limited to one stage at one time, but global theater dancing and over the course of decades.
That's a good point, you know. The video that Nelson made of Everything's Disappeared in January 93 by these two Canadian artists. One of them did really well, Eric somebody. We have me floating through the video dancing in a bubble. I never connected that. That's it. That's what I'm dancing on the head of the Android Memes pin.
Yes. Yes, moving from room to room,
right,
and to room to room, and causing effects that, you know, from like a God's eye view or a meme's eye view, or in retrospect, you can start to see some of the wake patterns, and they are uncanny.
Yeah, so take 1990. Zappa was big in mainstream terms in the late 60s. McLuhan was big in the early 60s. Let's say Zappa was big in by the mid-70s. Also big was William Irwin Thompson. Then Croker in his academic world got big in the 80s. So my thesis is the Android meme replayed itself. So the Android meme recycled these guys. So McLuhan was nowhere in the 80s. We all know about the McLuhan drought. Nobody cared about him. They almost tried to take away his tenure, right? So he's nowhere in the 80s. All of a sudden, the wall goes down, and Tiananmen Square happens, and Marchand's biography comes out, and then Wired makes him the patron saint. So McLuhan goes from nowhere to media, Android meme, center position. He's in the running because of Wired magazine in the 90s. When Zappa died in 93, within a year or two, there was an explosion of Zappa albums because Gayle sold the rights to Ryko or somebody. So you would go into the Virgin stores, different big stores, huge numbers of Zappa discs. Never before had anybody seen so much Zappa. So he got retrieved. LaRouche gets out of jail in 94, and then he's big all over the world in his world. So he got renovated. William Irwin Thompson had...